as I was coming in might be handy. I'm not one of those real strong voice preachers. As good as the mic can follow me around. Thank you. All right, that might make it a little bit easier to hear me for the most part tonight. It's good to see everybody back out this evening. Hope you've had a good afternoon. I don't think it will come as a surprise to anyone here tonight to hear me say that there is a great deal of religious misunderstanding in the world on a number of different topics. And even in what I refer to as the Christian world, oftentimes, I keep finding myself looking over here just out of habit, but there's nobody to look at. But anyway, I'll try to stop right here. But anyway, even with regard to the different laws that God has bound on men at different times in men's history, there's misunderstanding with regard to such things as that. And that misunderstanding regarding the different eras, the different laws, the different covenants, manifests itself in differing ways. And it is one of those ways in which it manifests itself that I would like to spend a few minutes talking with you about this evening. And specifically having to do with the day that has been set apart as a holy day, as a special day in the era of Christ. There are many people today who profess Christianity, and many of them are good, sincere, upstanding people, but who will oftentimes refer to the need to observe the Sabbath, or maybe the Christian Sabbath. And I really appreciate the overriding attitude that causes certain people to think and speak in this way and express such sentiments. We certainly should have regard for this day, the day that we are on right now, the day on which we know that the Lord arose from the grave, the day on which we know that our earliest brethren met to worship and honor him and his sacrifice. The fact is, and I know you know it, we all know it, that there are more and more people in this culture and in this society who just treat this as another day, as if there's nothing special about it. Another day maybe on which to do some work or some business, or maybe just another day to be off of work so that they can engage in recreational pursuits with no thought given to the significance of the day or of their need to worship. And so I appreciate those that do recognize that this is a special day. I wish that more people would give this day and its significance its proper due. But is the first day of the week, the day on which we meet and worship, is it rightfully considered the Sabbath or even the Christian Sabbath? Is the Sabbath law, with all the requirements that are involved in it, is the Sabbath law binding on men today? Of course, I will point out that the phrase or the term Christian Sabbath is foreign to the Scriptures. It is not found in the New Testament or the Old Testament for that matter. The phrase Christian Sabbath does not occur in the Bible, but the idea seems to be that the Sabbath must continue to be in effect in some fashion because, after all, it's part of the Ten Commandments, and everybody knows we're supposed to keep the Ten Commandments. Well, the fact is, it is necessary, I believe, to keep most of the things mentioned, most of the items mentioned in the Ten Commandments today, all but one of them, actually. But the reason we don't steal, the reason we don't commit adultery, the reason we don't bear false witness or make graven images is not because these things are stated in the Ten Commandments or the Old Law, but because they are restated in the Law of Christ. Again, all but one of them, all but one of the Ten Commandments. And interestingly enough, the single item from the Ten Commandments that is not stated in the New Law, Law of Christ, is the very thing I'm talking about this evening, the law regarding the Sabbath. Now, to better understand what we're talking about when we refer to the Sabbath law, I want to take note of what the actual term Sabbath literally refers to, without getting too deep into the weeds. But Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, and it literally refers to an intermission. Well, we know what an intermission is. An intermission really is a break from something. A break from what? Well, as it turns out, the word Shabbat comes from a Hebrew, or from a root word, also in Hebrew, obviously, that is Shabbat. And that word has reference to desisting from exertion. So taking this together, what we see is the Sabbath is considered to be a break from the work that a person might otherwise do during that time. It's a break, an intermission from exertion during a specified time, I suppose. Now, the word itself, the term itself, does not carry with it the idea of a specific time, as how long the intermission should last. But what we know is that the Lord spoke to Israel of the Sabbath day, thus establishing how long the break was to be, the intermission was to be, where they were concerned. And this was a break, a rest, that was to be strictly adhered to and strictly enforced, because the Lord wanted special regard to be given to this day, to the Sabbath. No work was to be done on the Sabbath. And the Lord was serious, very serious about this requirement. In the book of Numbers, in the 15th chapter, you can read there about a man, we're not told his name, but he went out one day to gather sticks. And the end result of that man's gathering sticks is, on the Lord's command, that man was stoned to death by the congregation of Israel. For gathering sticks? Technically, no. You see, it was for not keeping the Sabbath day holy, because as it turns out, it was on the Sabbath day that this man was gathering sticks. This is how strictly the Sabbath was to be enforced, how strictly the Lord expected it to be enforced and observed, and how seriously proper observance of it was to be taken by the people. This is what the term Sabbath has reference to in the Scriptures. And while I appreciate the reverence for the day that this type of terminology that people use implies, I do believe there is a need to understand that the Sabbath law is no longer binding, and that the term is not one that accurately describes the day that we observe as holy in the era of Christ. It does not reflect, or the use of the term reflects, I believe, a lack of understanding of the distinction that needs to be made between the law of God as it has been enforced in various periods of man's history. You see, the Sabbath law really belongs to one particular period of human history and does not exist or go on in perpetuity. We've noted this together before, but it's important for us to all be familiar with this, I think, that from a biblical perspective, the history of man can be divided into three distinct, what we call dispensations or eras. The first is what we refer to as the patriarchal dispensation. That began at creation with the creation of the first man and woman, and it carried on for, well, literally thousands of years, until the giving of the law of Moses to Israel at Mount Sinai. At Mount Sinai began what we refer to as the Mosaic dispensation, with that law and the establishment of the special covenant with Israel. And then, of course, the third era or dispensation is the one in which we live, the era of Christ. That began following the sacrifice of Jesus at Calvary. Well, of those three eras, the Sabbath law only applied during that era in which the larger law that governed it was in force. That would be the Mosaic dispensation. It was at that time that the Sabbath law was laid out. I do think it's useful to be aware of the fact that not only was it not intended to go on after that era, it was not enforced before that era. What I'm saying is, it's not like the Sabbath law had been around since the beginning. You don't see the term Sabbath being used by God until the events of Exodus chapter 16, during which time Israel was on its way from Egypt to Sinai. They were in the wilderness of Sin or Sin. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce it. It's the wilderness that gets you to the mountain of Sinai. But they were in the wilderness where the Lord had begun to provide them with bread. Remember that manna, bread from heaven. And as part of the instructions given concerning the gathering of manna and its preparation for your household, God made use of this term for the first time. The people had been told, remember, to gather what they needed for one day each morning, except for the sixth day. They were told then to gather twice as much manna as they would on any other day, because they would not be gathering any manna on the Sabbath day. There wouldn't be any there. Instead, what God says in Exodus chapter 16 and verse 23 is, tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today, boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning. This is the first instance of the term appearing. They've not gotten to Mount Sinai yet. The law has not yet been given, but God makes use of this term. He says, don't gather manna on the seventh day. It is to be a Sabbath. It is to be an intermission, a break from exertion, a day that is set apart for dedication to the Lord. This, again, is when Israel is introduced to the term by God, or at least in this context. Now, page or two over in your Bible, in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 8, it is established as part of the core of the law. Remember, we've noted how that really you've got all the various statutes that were given to the children of Israel, over 600 of them, but they really can all be summed up in those 10 statements, those 10 commandments that God gave when they arrived at Mount Sinai. And of course, the fourth commandment was, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. It was a day they were familiar with by now, and God lays it out in the law, in that core of the law that is the Ten Commandments. You remember this day, and you make sure that you continue to sanctify it and keep it holy. So it really is when the law of Moses is given that it becomes binding as part of the law, as part of the written law that God gave them there. Now, obviously, they were commanded to observe it in the gathering of the manna already. But the fact is, and what I'm getting at, is a lot of history had already transpired on earth by that time. You know, when you look at the book of Genesis, you know, you don't get to the book of Exodus until you go through the book of Genesis. And when you look at the book of Genesis, you're looking at a book that records many years of history, thousands of years of history. In fact, I think we've noted this before, but the book of Genesis literally covers more history than the remainder of the Bible combined. And yet, despite all the history that is covered in that book, you will find no mention of a Sabbath law being enforced on people during that time. Now, it is true that you do find in Genesis part of the reason that the seventh day was chosen for this special observance, that in the giving of the Ten Commandments, reference is even made to it, to what is noted in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 2, that after creating the world in 6 days, God rested from his work on the Sabbath, on the seventh day. Nevertheless, the command for Israel to observe the Sabbath as a special holy day was never mentioned in all those years prior to the Exodus. And my primary point being is that it was never necessary to the plans and purposes of God that the Sabbath law be perpetually binding in every generation. It has not been, and it is not now. It is a law that belongs to this one single era of history, during which time the law of Moses given at Sinai was enforced. This Sabbath law was not there prior to Sinai, and there's no indication that it remains binding in the era of Christ. Because again, the law that enforced, the law that commanded the observance of the Sabbath, is a defunct law now. And we might also note that being binding in only one era, that era in which the law of Moses was binding, it was thus, in that era, binding only upon one people. Not only was it only ever binding during one period of history, even during that period of history, it was binding only upon one nation of people. I do believe that the extent of the reach of the law of Moses during its time is another thing that's misunderstood by many people in the religious world. I believe this in no small part because I didn't understand it myself for many years. There were many peoples and many nations on earth during the time of the law of Moses and when it was in effect. And the law of Moses was not binding on those other nations. It was binding only upon the children of Israel. Paul makes reference to this fact, I believe, in the second chapter of the book of Romans. In Romans chapter 2. Now, keeping in mind that a Gentile nation is any nation that is not Israel. A Gentile is any person who is not a Jew. Paul is speaking regarding Jews and Gentiles in Romans chapter 2 and verse 14. And he writes, therefore, when Gentiles who do not have the law, by nature do the things in the law, these, although not having the law, are a law to themselves. I really just want to focus in on the fact that Paul notes here, the Gentiles were not given the law of Moses. That's what's relevant to the study that we're engaged in this evening. The Gentiles did not have the law. Well, again, who are the Gentiles? Anyone who is not a Jew, not of the nation of Israel. This law was not given to them. It was not given to us. Not long ago, as I thought about things like this, I got to thinking about this fact as it may relate to one of the accounts of the burial of Jesus. I'm thinking about what is recorded by Mark in his gospel account in Mark chapter 15, after Jesus' death, after Jesus has already died, but before he's been raised. Beginning in Mark chapter 15 and verse 42, Mark 15 and verse 42, he writes, now when evening had come, because it was preparation day, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent council member, who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, coming and taking courage, went into Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. It seems that Joseph was concerned that Jesus should be taken off the cross and buried before the Sabbath. And he believed that this was necessary for him to do, because the Romans weren't going to do it. They had no concern about the Sabbath. They weren't Jews. They had not been given this law. Now, I can't say for certain that that's what was going on in Joseph's thinking. I just can't help but wonder in this vein that he knew, well, the Romans are not required to do anything. I need to do something. But I just wonder. That's just something I've wondered about. But I am confident that back in Nehemiah chapter 9, the leaders of the people were speaking of the people of Israel and no others. When in Nehemiah chapter 9 and verse 13, they said to the Lord, you came down also on Mount Sinai and spoke with them from heaven and gave them just ordinances and true laws, good statutes and commandments. You made known to them your holy Sabbath and commanded them precepts, statutes, laws by the hand of Moses your servant. Who is the them that they referred to there? The them are the children of Israel that had gathered at Mount Sinai. In context, they are acknowledging that it was only them, only the nation of Israel, to whom the law was given. And of course, here it is specified that the law was given by God through Moses to Israel. This is said of no other nation no other people. The Sabbath law only ever applied to this one distinct nation of people. And we might note as well that for that distinct people, there were particular purposes that the law served that applied only to that one people. There was, for example, a memorial aspect of the Sabbath observance for the Israelites. In Deuteronomy, the fifth chapter, Deuteronomy chapter 5, as he recounted the Ten Commandments to the people just before they entered the land of promise, Deuteronomy 5, and beginning in verse 12, Moses said, "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. And remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." In verse 15 of that text, the remembrance of their time as slaves in the land of Egypt is given as one of the reasons God commanded them to observe the Sabbath. And so it had this memorial aspect that they could relate to, that applied to them, that really doesn't apply to us today. What's more, in Exodus chapter 31, while the children of Israel were still at Mount Sinai and the law was still being revealed there at Sinai, the Lord also noted that the Sabbath observance was also a special sign between him and Israel. Now that's interesting terminology that the Lord uses there. The Sabbath is a sign between me and you. It kind of put me in mind of the rite of circumcision, remember? That was given to Abraham, then was given later to the nation of Israel. And the rite of circumcision, that is called a sign of the covenant. Same terminology. Here in Exodus chapter 31 and verse 13, the Lord refers to the Sabbath observance with that same verbiage, calling it a sign between him and Israel. Farther down, that same chapter, verses 16 and 17, it is referred to again as a sign and a covenant between God and fleshly Israel. That is what the Sabbath is. In fact, if you're there in Exodus 31, you might notice that in verse 16 it says, "The children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath." In verse 17, God says, "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel." In these things, we see that the observance of the Sabbath was something distinct about the nation of Israel, ancient Israel, that set them apart from other nations of that time. And we might just say, even among any other righteous people of that time that may have been living on the earth. The purposes for which this part of the law was instituted apply only to that nation while its distinct law remained in effect and binding over them. But as we know, that nation itself did not remain. And the law did not remain in effect. And of course, we've noted many times together already that in the New Testament, we find that the law that governed the covenant between God and fleshly Israel has been rendered in the era of Christ obsolete. In fact, obsolete is the very term that the Hebrew writer used regarding that law that enforced the Sabbath observance. In Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 13, speaking of that law, the writer said that it was becoming obsolete and ready to vanish away. This is by design. It was by design. This is what the Lord intended all along. There in Hebrews 8, the writer, just prior to his statement in verse 13, had quoted from Jeremiah 31. I hope a lot of you are becoming familiar with Jeremiah 31 now. We've looked at it together several times. We're not going to read it right now, but we've taken note about Jeremiah's situation as he wrote what he did. Jeremiah was a prophet of God, a faithful man of God who lived under the law of Moses. He observed the law of Moses, but in Jeremiah chapter 31, he wrote of a day that was coming when the law that he lived under would be no more, when the covenant that he lived under would be no more, because that was part of God's overall scheme of redemption, that the law would eventually pass away. He was speaking and writing in anticipation of the covenant and law of Christ under which we live. That is the covenant, that is the law that replaced the one established at Mount Sinai. God was letting Israel know, hundreds of years ahead of time, even while they were still living under the law, that that law would not remain in effect forever. We've noted Paul's words in this regard as well. We might say that it was Jeremiah was writing in anticipation of this time, of the day when the law, the old law would be taken out of the way. Well, in Colossians chapter 3, Paul writes about it, but he writes about it as it has already happened. It has come to pass. The law has been taken out of the way. Down in verse 14, Colossians 3 and 14, speaking of the law given to Israel, Paul notes that Christ has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to his cross. The law is no longer in effect. That law. And it can no longer be appealed to for justification, nor can it rightfully be bound upon anyone today. Got any doubt about that? Go back and read the book of Galatians. So, again, the law is not binding. And so if you look at the Ten Commandments, you do find, as you look through the New Testament, all but one of those commandments is restated in some form in the New Testament. But anything that is not restated in the New Testament is not binding, because it's not a part of the law that Christ has given us. And among those Ten Commands that were given when the children of Israel first arrived at Mount Sinai, the only one that wasn't restated is this one, concerning the Sabbath law. If you're there in Colossians 3, you might have a look in verse 16 as well. Having just noted that the old law was taken out of the way, Paul goes on to say, "So let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or new moon." And these, I think, would be regarding those festivals and new moon celebrations that took place under the law. "Regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbaths." Paul is speaking in this verse of things that pertain to that former law. Food and drink restrictions that were part of that law. Festivals and new moon observances that were required of that law. And he also mentions Sabbaths. No one could rightfully judge the brethren to whom Paul wrote based on whether they observe the Sabbath at all, really. Because like these other things enumerated in the law, the Sabbath, or unlike these other things, I guess we should say, the Sabbath was not carried over into the law of Christ, the observance of that particular day. Instead of the Sabbath being restated and included as a part of that new law that Jesus gave us following the events of Calvary, the Sabbath really, we might say, was replaced. Whereas the Sabbath had been set apart by God under that old law as a day of remembrance and rest, and designated by God also as being the seventh day of the week, in the New Testament, we find disciples of Jesus observing a different day of the week and giving the indication that it was sacred to them. And when you think about what these earliest Christians were doing, keep in mind as well that they were operating largely based on the instruction that they were given by Holy Spirit-guided men. So they were doing what the Lord wanted them to do. And these brethren are not recorded as observing the seventh as though it were binding upon them by the Lord. No. When they came together to worship and to engage in memorial, it was the first day of the week. We see this, for example, in Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. It was on the first day of the week that those earliest disciples of Jesus, in this case the brethren at Troas, came together so as to break bread and remember the sacrifice of Jesus and to hear, in that instance, the preaching of the Apostle Paul. Not the seventh day, the first day. And it is not referred to there as the Sabbath, nor is it referred to as the Sabbath anywhere else. And once again, that is a term that is foreign to the New Testament as far as a Christian Sabbath. The sacred day that those earliest Christians observed was the first day of the week, and the only place I can see a name given to it that suggests its significance is John's reference to it in Revelation chapter 1 and verse 10 as the Lord's Day. That's how we identify the day now. It is not identified as the Sabbath, which would imply that a break from exertion was being required and enforced. Really, no such break, no such intermission is required under the law of Christ on a given day as it was under the law of Moses. Now, I will state from a personal perspective, sometimes I do find it kind of sad that so many people do treat it as just another day and do not give any thought to the significance of the day. But the fact of the matter is, there is nothing forbidden on the first day of the week that isn't forbidden every other day of the week as well. But my conclusion from all of this, really, is that the observance of the Sabbath had a purpose. The purpose has been served. It is no longer required and no longer binding under the law that we live in the era of Christ. So, why is this important? Why does this merit our attention? Well, I believe this misunderstanding regarding the Sabbath, in many cases at least, implies a broader misunderstanding of the law of God in the age of Christ. And that misunderstanding, in turn, has led to a host of errors in the beliefs and practices of many people professing Christianity and many churches. When we understand that there is no need to appeal to that former law, and in fact that it is a grave mistake to do so, we will be better able to focus our attention on only that which the Lord has authorized and required in the age in which we live, the age of Jesus the Christ. And hopefully, we will be better able, given that focus, to do and be what He actually wants us to do and what He actually wants us to be. Thank you for your attention this evening. Go ahead and get ready to sing the song that David has selected. Again, as we close things out, I want to make you aware. I always want to make you aware. Repetition, remember, that's the key to learning. But the opportunity is here for you right now, if you've never been baptized into Christ, to do so. But again, I want to emphasize, and I mentioned a few weeks ago, Marcus and I were talking about this as we ate breakfast together one day, and you know, we talk about it here at the service, but we need to emphasize it. If it comes to you later that you decide you want to do this, fine. Give me a call. Give someone in the congregation a call. We can make arrangements for you to be immersed in the waters of baptism. But again, what a convenient time now is. And so if you have need to come to the Lord and be immersed in the waters of baptism with Him, that opportunity is before you now. We want to offer it to you. If you're a child of God that's drifted from the way and you need the help of the church, you can come before your brothers and sisters right now and receive that help. We want to give it to you. We all want to go to heaven, don't we? And we all want everybody else in the room to go to heaven with us. Well, let's all resolve to do that very thing and do whatever it takes to get there. Please let us help you even now as we stand and sing together.
We will go.